We welcome to the program State Senator Mark Schessler from the 9th District. Senator, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
Well, great to be back to my listeners.
Always appreciate your time, especially when we can talk about something as timely as the bill that you will be filing, which we understand is bipartisan in nature, that deals with a very high-profile recent issue, and that is the release of serial rapist Kevin Coe by the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board, which that's a whole topic in and of itself. But he was released. One community said, absolutely no way, we're not taking him. He wound up eventually at a place in Federal Way where he passed away recently. But the point of the whole thing is serial rapists shouldn't be up for release.
Well, absolutely not. But when I visited the Special Commitment Center a few years back, there were a small number of sex offenders that absolutely refused treatment, should never see the light of day under any circumstances. And as I actually met with some of Kevin Coe's victims, attempted victims, their families, I was absolutely certain it was the right thing to do. And I said from day one, I don't have to be the sponsor, I'll be a co-sponsor. I offered Senator Richelli from Spokane the sponsorship, and he said, nope. You prime it, I'll go number two. I said, okay, we're going to go forward on this.
So talk to us about what the bill would do if the legislature decides they want to act upon it.
Well, a couple of the obvious are, many years ago when I was still in the House, the courts ruled that we couldn't keep these people beyond their sentence dates because of their constitutional rights. So we came with the Special Commitment Center because nobody would accept this in their legislative district, period. Wouldn't do it. And it worked fairly well until the Coe case. And the two things that come to mind immediately that are in the bill, if a sex offender refuses treatment, they're ineligible. If they never express regrets, apologize to their victims, that's strike two. So we've got these lined up. There were the holes in keeping Kevin Coe there. If the worst of the worst sex offenders reject treatment, they never should see the light of day under any circumstances. And if you've actually sat down with one of Coe's victims or attempted victims, you very quickly see that no rape victim should ever have the accuser get off free at any point in their lives when they're unrepentant.
Without question.
Yeah.
We're talking with State Senator Mark Schessler from the 9th District here on The Bottom Line.
That's one of the things that they said about him, too, is that he refused treatment. And did any of that, his earlier release, now I know he refused the treatment, the fact that he was tied to 37 assaults, but they only were able to make one stick in court, probably because of a lot, they didn't have the DNA and all that. Is that part of it too? Do they also factor in the number of actual convictions, offenses? Is that part of the equation as well, whether to keep these people beyond their sentence because they still are a clear and present danger?
Well, the court said you could only keep them for their actual sentence.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew decades ago, some sex offenders, rapists, absolutely refuse treatment, show no remorse.
Yeah.
And we've successfully kept them there. Now, DSHS claims that some are benefiting from treatment. I can't prove otherwise. But they admitted there is a small number that refuse treatment. And eliminating these loopholes for future cases that come up is what's important. Because I lived in the Spokane area during South Hill Rapist. I read the book, Son, by Jack Olson. The prosecutor that ran the second trial is an acquaintance of my wife and mine. And I knew the late Don Brockett fairly well. There was so much more to this case and others. I mean, oftentimes a sex offender like this seldom gets caught for just one. There's attempted, there's ones that can't be proven. They are sick people that should not be out in society, period.
You know, Senator, we've been somewhat critical of the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board over the years based on the number of people who they hear the petition for early release. Mm-hmm. The overwhelming majority of them have committed a sexual crime, and the majority of those tend to be against children. Yet we continue, and present company excluded, of course, the legislature continues to make it easier for people that commit these violent, lifetime scarring crimes to give them the ability to get back on the street earlier and earlier and earlier. Are you hoping that this bill will either get a refresh or a relook at what the current pattern is and that we may be able to start reversing? Or is this more to let the public know, hey, this is what's happening. If you didn't hear about it, this is what's going on. We need to change it.
Well, I think it's all the above. You have to hear from the victims' families. Their lives are changed forever. I think too many legislators talk to the criminals and not enough of the crime victims.
I couldn't agree more. And that's if they even talk to the criminals. It may be simply based on what the ideology of the day is telling them.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're going to go in this direction because this seems to be the trend among those that believe what we believe. Have you pre-filed this already?
Yes, the bill is filed. It's out there. The number, you got a press release, so you'll see the bill number. I don't have the bill or the press release in front of me. I'm stopped in rural Garfield County visiting with you.
Well, we're glad you stopped.
I thought I should practice a little bit of safety.
Hey, you know, practice what you preach. Absolutely. So, do you expect this to get a hearing in committee? Hopefully the bipartisan aspect of it will allow that to at least get a hearing in committee.
Well, I think it should because it's bipartisan. The other thing is it doesn't add a fiscal cost. You know, a lot of good bills are killed because of fiscal notes. There's going to be an indeterminate fiscal note on this because we don't know when the next case comes up. So it can't be killed by the fiscal note. Senator Riccielli graciously became number two. He could have been number one. Senator Trudeau, who's on the Law and Justice Committee, is also the chair of Capital Budget, who I've worked really well with. And she is an attorney. She's got some background AG's office. She looked at it and she happily signed it. So I see, you know, two of my Democrat colleagues that, you know, we find some things to agree on signed on. That's an encouraging sign that, and they can't possibly hang a fiscal note on it because all the information's there and we don't know when the last or next person will be
right
to come out.
We're talking with State Senator Mark Schessler from the 9th District here on the Bottom Line. Senator, if you don't mind, I'd like to turn the page for a minute and ask you about the coming session. I wonder how many other people noticed that the governor tried a little sleight of hand, kind of like he did in his inauguration speech. But this time when he talked about the supplemental budget that he was proposing, that he said he wasn't going to propose any new taxes, but he left out the part that legally he can't.
Well, there's several things here. First of all, the governor said no net increase in taxes. And he ruled out sales tax and property tax general increases. So the verbiage was no net increase. And in the past, we've had Book One, which is current law and relies on savings, efficiencies, or cuts. And then book two, which is what you get with all sorts of new revenue. How the governor releases this, I'm not certain. But remember, he said no net gain in taxes.
From his budget.
So he could do an offset for some, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't mean he won't sign whatever the majority party puts in front of him.
Yeah.
Well, he declared $9 billion a victory over what had been proposed.
Yeah, for who exactly? Still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
There's also going to be... Oh, go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, I want to try and not have a knee-jerk reaction that he doesn't mean it. I mean, I really hope he does. I hope he means that he wants something similar to that and not some of the crazy things that have been proposed by some members of the legislature.
Well, and speaking of that, you've been in the legislature long enough that you have seen how things have shifted over time, where it was once a much more of a bipartisan place to work, where the common goal was to better the state, even though may have been different approaches, it wasn't as far apart as it is now and where it's come over the better part of the last decade. One of those crazy bills that you alluded to would hit a 5% payroll tax on employers that pay $125,000 or more in salary. And I believe it would also hit those who make $125,000 or more in salary, kind of hit a double whammy, which if that's taxing the wealthy, we've just redefined what wealthy is in Washington state. It's $125,000.
Well, but you remember, it's only the private sector. It's not going to be the teachers or principals, university people. It's only the private sector that is paying these excessive wages, according to their proposal.
Yes, only the private sector.
You know, if you look at, you know, pull up the salaries in a major school district, and I'm sure you'll find plenty of targets for that tax. They don't apply. You pull up the university payroll, they don't pay.
Well, and at the press conference, SEIU and the state workers union had representatives there as well. So, of course, none of them are going to be impacted or hit by that tax. But the job creators will be. Mm-hmm. And in a state that's bemoaning its revenue shortfalls, moving job creators out or getting large businesses to rethink where they want to do business probably isn't going to help that revenue shortfall.
Well, circling back to your comments about the changes in the way the budget goes, when we had a two-thirds rule on taxes, we had to cooperate because it was such a high bar. And we did cooperate. I mean, sure, there may have been some gimmicks, but there was better cooperation. If the numbers are relatively close, you have a two-thirds rule on taxes, then you get down into deep dives into the cost of government, cooperation. You have a debate, should we do user fees or taxes? Well, since two-thirds on taxes, maybe you do a user fee instead. But you have a necessity to work together. And right now, we don't have narrow majorities or a two-thirds rule on taxes.
We're talking with State Senator Mark Schessler from the 9th District here on the bottom line. Senator, anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, I hope that they will stay engaged through the coming session. And it's not just calling the area legislators who are probably going to do what they want, but it's reminding the governor, you said no taxes. You said you were going to put together a conservative budget. So I'm positive none of the legislators in your listening area are going to vote for these taxes. But let's remind the governor of his budget and hope he keeps to his word.
State Senator Mark Schessler, long-serving for the 9th District. Always appreciate your time, sir. Thank you very much for joining us. And yes, look forward to watching the progress of your bill during the session.
Thanks a lot, and have a Merry Christmas.
And you as well, sir. Very Merry Christmas to you and yours. State Senator Mark Schessler from the 9th District, joining us here on The Bottom Line.